Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
On today's Believe in Chicago Sports podcast, we're bringing the Super League to Chicago. Would our teams make the Super League that took the news by storm in the European soccer world? Plus, Jim McMahon's comments on saying that the Bears are the place where quarterbacks go to die. Agree, disagree, or is it just what we're used to for the last million years? All that and more in episode 52 now.
Welcome in to episode 52 of the Believe in Chicago Sports Podcast with your fine co-host here, myself, Dan Collins. You can find on Twitter at TweetDanCollins. My fine, lovely co-host, Joey Gelman, who you can find on Twitter at Joey Gelman. You can find the show on Twitter at Believe in Chicago. And as always, we are brought to you by the Believe Podcast Network, your number one podcast network for professionals. Joey teased it. We're going to get right to it. Super League fiasco. I'll be completely transparent with all the listeners. We were talking about some topics with the show, what kind of direction we want to take it. And as soon as you even texted the words Super League, I was all for it. Obviously, you know, it's European soccer related. The big wigs over there, the powers that be at the main clubs, attempted. It doesn't look like it's going to happen. It looks like it will very much fall through thanks to the very rapid reception that it got, negative reception, we should say. But I thought it would be neat to kind of, one, discuss it, and then two, link it with the Chicago-based Chicago sports theme here, which we'll definitely do shortly. First, we're going to get to that. And a quick reminder, Joey, I don't know if you know this. If you're listening to the show today, publishing day, we are recording it the day prior, which is the anniversary of the Phillip Umber perfect game.
There you go. So
we were just talking about this last show about the no hitters and the perfect games over there on the south side of Chicago almost becoming just a thing of just normal. It's just a normal occurrence there now with back-to-back years having no hitters. But yes, we are recording this obviously the day before you're able to listen to it, which is the anniversary of the Phillip Umber perfect game. So obviously just want to note that. Very cool. It's almost like we could have done this show like a week ago and started talking or we should have waited, I guess I should say, to recap the no-hitter and whatnot. Either way, we'll get right to it. I kind of am one of the very few – and I almost feel guilty, Joey. I feel guilty saying this. I think I was one of the very few fans, and I would consider myself a footy fan, especially of European soccer, football, as I should say. I think I was one of the ones that was intrigued in a positive way by the Super League. Now, if you're any kind of hardcore fan or even a middle of the road fan, you probably hated, barfed, or disgusted at the idea of it simply for the main fact that tradition wise and whatnot, like that's just not what the world of football is about in Europe, right? It's all about you get punished if you lose and you get much success, you get much recognition, you get much reward if you win. I really wish like it was like that in American sports with like the whole draft system and things like that, but that's a different podcast, and maybe that's episode 60 or 70 down the road. But I think I was one of the few that was intrigued by it in a positive way. And I guess I'm just I apologize ahead of time, Joey, for not knowing your exact level of fandom when it comes to soccer, whether it be here nationally or internationally. But I am curious your thoughts on it when you dived, you know, a little into it, what your initial reaction was to said Super League. Superliga, maybe we should call it.
Well, I first thought that all these teams, these 12 teams, would be leaving their domestic playing schedule and then only creating something for themselves in this league. So that's gotcha. Where I was
negative,
misinformed and negative about it. But the way it would stand, where this would be in addition to those domestic games and everything else in between that, is an interesting proposal. I mean, it's literally the top 12 teams saying we want to make all the money and people are going to watch us. And this is going to be the best tournament in the world because it's everyone from around the world, at least Europe, coming to play in this in the top tier league. So I think it's really, really interesting. But I guess I'm not the, you know, biggest soccer follower. I mean, I appreciate the game and I keep tabs on it, but I guess, you know, teams qualify for, you know, UEFA and you have the UEFA Champions League and all of that. What's the difference? Like, I know it's a competition. Right. Excuse me. It's a competitor to, okay, you have the top 12 teams in this thing that would probably also be in the Champions League, which is why it butted heads with everyone. But, I mean, the fact that, like, Boris Johnson came out, the Prime Minister of England, and was like, we're making legislation in the House of the Lords to slam this down. It's like, holy crap. Like, this thing's a big deal. And it was just fascinating. It was literally like the, I mean, there's going to be a 30 for 30 on it. It's going to be amazing if it does fail, because the frenzy that it became for, what was it, 2 days, 3 days, and that's it? It was wild.
So, something along those lines, yeah. And it's funny because it's just so weird how I'm just so back and forth on whether or not I like this or not. I literally just said 2 minutes ago, I did say I was intrigued. I didn't say I was right behind it, but you're halfway, you're almost absolutely right. You're kind of right, where it's funny because literally that's what the Champions League is, except two major things. One, the Champions League isn't just 12 teams, right? It isn't just a dozen very stellar powerhouses, you know, doing a tournament and then calling it a day, meaning revenue share, right? Which this was all basically about, right? It's all about profits and making money, and that's a ton of money to be made when you're talking just 12 powerhouse clubs having a tournament and being able to distribute all the wealth just among the dozen. I mean, because you look at the Champions League, the league this year, with 32 teams, so you're talking like, you don't get no, you know, there's no Olympiacos or Ajax, you know, in this Super League. Maybe 10 years ago or, you know, 20 years ago, you would have had a team like Ajax or something. But that's just the thing, is like, the best way to look at it, and I actually saw this in a Twitter comment the other day, is it's like if you had the NCAA tournament, but it was only like, you know, the top 16 teams in college basketball, period. Like, it was like a top 16 tournament instead of having, you know.
So the college football playoff.
Kind of, yeah, in a sense. No, you're right. Yeah. I mean, in a sense, that's kind of what it would be. Although, you know, football and everything just being a one and done and in and out, totally different animal. But, I mean, yeah, that's exactly what it would be, is, you know, you wouldn't have, like, the Oral Roberts or things of that nature in that type of a tournament, which that's just where it's like, come on, it's like you said, it's just a greedy. Like, we already have this. It's not like we have this. We have these powerhouses that continually, year after year, do face each other, you know, if they stay up to that powerhouse mentality, which, like, the Real Madrids, the Barcelonas, for the most part, the Manchester Uniteds, which the team I support, but, like, not like they're necessarily in the Champions League every year, but still, like, the creme de la creme, yes. And still, the other ones obviously in contention the majority of the time, to, you know, flirting with it at the end of the season to be top four in the league, or, you know, whatever the standards are in terms of making it. So, yeah, I mean, it's nuts in terms of, like, just what European football is, right? Like, if you look at it, like, from, like, an American sports fan standpoint, it's almost not as wild as a concept. And the thing with me here is, from a sports standpoint and just from a owner's kind of having a lot of leverage standpoint, is I think the sad reality is, no matter how many pissed off fans there were, former players, analysts, supporters of European soccer, of European football, I should say, sad reality is, still would have watched, right? Like, if the Super League were to have happened, you still would have got plenty of viewers, plenty of sponsorships, there would have been plenty of eyes on it. I think the thing that really said, oh, no, 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 I think it was less the fans, you know, throwing a very, very big message out there, you know, to the owners of these clubs saying, heck no. And I think it was more like literally UEFA and FIFA stepping in and being like, no, 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 no. Like, you're out of here. Like, there's no Champions League for you if, like, you decide you want to do this whole Super League thing. Like, no, there'll be none of that, which – imagine how much UEFA would suffer from that if it really got that far. If you don't have Barcelona, Real Madrid, Man City, Liverpool in the Champions League. So that would have been a whole fiasco, but I think that's mostly what stopped it. But very interesting concept. And I guess the scariest thing about it is, like, I don't know why. I just don't like the idea of 12 really rich owners getting together. And, hey, kudos to them for having a good make money idea. Like, hey, that's what they do. You know, they're billionaires. Like, what they do is figure out ways, like, to make tons of money. But, yeah, I guess it just bothers me a little bit that that's what they did. It's kind of really sneaky and things like that. Obviously didn't seem like coaches knew, managers knew, players knew. It's like, wow, like, it literally, at least the way they made it seem, that the majority of it was literally just amongst themselves, you know, the ownership groups. And that right there was just a little interesting. It's kind of funny. Somebody was telling me, like, man, you think it's really weird when you start, like, siding with FIFA and UEFA in terms of ethics, right? Like, that's when it gets a little weird. And that's exactly, I think, what a lot of footy fans did this past week.
Yeah, it was fascinating. And I think you brought up the point about looking at it from an American perspective, and yeah. It's kind of funny because I always have a difficult time understanding how qualifications and things for European soccer work, just because it's not in my American brain of, you know, yes, the there are domestic cups and you win your league and the domestic cup and other cups throughout the year, and it's all and it's very confusing to me, versus in the American sports, you play regular season and yeah. You have a tournament at the end. This setup of the UEFA Champions League fits my American brain in that regard. It's
interesting.
It's you know, you play the year domestically, you win your cups, you could win the Premier League, whatever you want to do, La Liga, and then you qualify for the Champions League. And then you play in that. And that makes sense in my brain. So when all this kind of came down, it was just like, it's messing with, you know, the system that actually I understand because yeah. it's taking, you know, the opportunity away from those teams that maybe never had a shot, suddenly get hot, win their domestic cups and win their league title and then qualify to get in. And I think that's what people were so frustrated about, is it took away the importance of the quote-unquote regular season. And it's funny because... Sorry, I'm going all over the map. But it's funny because here, the regular season is getting less and less important for many of our sports, besides football, because people kind of wait for the playoffs for baseball and hockey and basketball. And it's just funny that in this regard, you know, it was the fans that said, no, like, our regular season, our rivalries, our domestic tournaments, they're important and they matter, and this system works for us and how we qualify our teams. And to take that away is just kind of it was greedy, like you said, and I get the specter of it, but most of these teams play each other all the time in the current system. So taking a super league and doing it, it makes it like the invitational again. That's why I said college football. It's not, nobody else has a chance. And while, maybe high quality and high caliber, it muddies the waters again for what you would as a fan determine is your championship. Because, like, Illinois could win the Kraft Fight Hunger Bowl, but that's great. But they're not in the college football playoff. Yeah. So they doesn't resonate. And it'd be the same with this. Like, my team could not really have a real shot at being in the Super League. So then what's the real championship? Is it my domestic tournaments? Is it my league title? Is it the UEFA Champions League? Is it the Champions Cup? Is it the World Cup? I mean, it's like you have to, like, choose which one you want as a fan. So it was just crazy and fun to watch. And it was, like, supposed to rock the sports world and then literally fizzled. It was wild. But my last point is, will be interesting to see is, I heard this today, but there are a couple owners, as you know, that own NFL teams as well as European soccer teams. And I wonder if this was kind of the trial balloon of, like, could we get away with this? Could we do this? How can it translate to sports here, to where you take the top 10 basketball teams in the NBA and go play and disregard the
rest. Playoffs, though.
Right.
You know, like, I think that's what they were trying to do. The thing is, and you have to catch up to pace on European football, my friend. I think you will love it, because the easiest way to look at it, besides like the little side cups they also do domestically, is if you're a good enough team, like if you're a top four, top two, top three team, whatever, they'll say top four. If you're a top four team in your domestic league, yes, you are trying to win your domestic title, which is fantastic. I mean, that's still effing amazing. But if you finish top, say like Premier League, if you finish top four, then the next season you're playing in the Champions League, which is literally just a playoff because that's playoff format. Champions League is playoff format.
Right.
Domestic League is literally just like regular season format. But at the end of the day, it's like if hockey just did a regular season and the team with the most points, like domestically, like they win the Stanley Cup, there's not even a Stanley Cup playoff. If hockey, like say, was big enough around the world, I mean, that's exactly – like if there's enough teams in other countries that can literally contend with like American-style hockey, then that's literally what you would have. You would have, you know, a USA hockey here, the NHL. I mean, I guess it would be a little different with the whole Canadian teams and things like that. But it would be domestically. It would just end. The team with the most points wins the domestic league. Then you would still have, say, like a Stanley Cup playoff thing, but that would be then the Champions League, which is really cool because like I think the biggest like beef, for lack of a better way of putting it, that American sports fans have with, say, like the domestic style of, let's just say, like the Premier League in England, is, wait a minute, you can win the Premier League, you can win the championship, but there's no playoffs. And it's like, well, that's kind of the beauty of it, because if your team is good enough to win the Premier League, they will go to a playoff. But like, it's funny, I'm going to use this term. It's like a super playoff because it's the best teams in Europe facing off. And that's just like the culture of soccer, the history of soccer. And I think that it really only works there for two main reasons. One, because UEFA, you know, just Europe alone, they can make it work. Just do like the size, you know what I mean? Like you're talking like the size and like the just the proximity of these places. Were like America, huge, gigantic, and not only that, of the four major sports we play, like who's going to compete with America in any of them? Basketball, football, like internationally, right? Like none of them. I mean, maybe hockey would, maybe would be a little interesting if, you know, there was still.
I would say maybe baseball too.
Maybe, yeah, for sure. But it's also just like proximity-wise too. Like UEFA works because it's Europe, and that's where all those European countries are. So it just works, and it'd be a whole lot different. Like if America tried to do something with just American teams, right? Like there's almost no point. Like you might as well just have the regular season gets you into the playoffs because like it just makes the most sense. Like it's just American teams against American teams. But either way, that puts us. Speaking of American teams and Super League style. We pose the question of, would any of the Chicago sports teams, we can look at it from a baseball standpoint, or hell, even basketball, football, if you wanted to, Chicago Bears in the Super League, can't even make the Super Bowl, but would any, I guess, of the Chicago sports teams be in a Super League?
You know, based on history and city size and impact and importance on the sport, you would argue yes. But based on current iteration of the team and talent, I can't see any of them being invited except the White Sox. Because the Bears are the history, historic franchise, all the stuff, charter, whatever, but they're really not good anymore right now. The Bulls aren't there yet. The Hawks depends on the year. I mean, they maybe because of their 10-year cup run, they would make it off of that. The Cubs are a maybe, and the White Sox are the big guarantee for me in there. But it's tough when you know how this kind of shakes out every year, who the top teams are across each sport, and it's not coming from Chicago, unfortunately.
You know, that's interesting, because I was almost going to say the opposite in terms of just knowing what top, you know, what teams are going to be at the top every year. I mean, that's gotten a little bit like that, like, it happens like almost like by decade with like the NBA, right? Like, you know, like, oh, in the 80s, you have like, you know, Celtics, Lakers. In the 90s, you have Bulls and whoever else wants to come out of the Western Conference. And, you know, Golden State, LeBron. It's like Golden State and whoever LeBron James faces the next decade. But the thing with the European Super League is it's teams that, unfortunately, like, they're just not going away. Like, for decades, they've been a top five team to reckon with in their league for the most part, domestic league, and then, you know, for decades to come, they're, you know, if you want to forecast it, they'll be a top two, top five team in their domestic league, where it's different in American sports because there's a whole lot more of, you know, stricter restrictions, right? If that makes any sense, where much harsher, you know, salary cap penalties and salary caps to begin with. And so, you know, if it was like the type of system you have in Europe, every Chicago team, right? It would probably be like Chicago, New York, LA, and, you know, maybe Houston or something, for the most part, always competing against each other because they would have the money. But just with the way things are also distributed from a revenue standpoint and everything, like, I understand, like, we have, like, you know, big market teams and small market teams still, like in baseball, where, you know, you look at the Yankees payroll and it's this, and you look at the Rays payroll and it's this, but it still doesn't compare to like a team like, say, a Manchester United and a team that is like fighting for promotion to the Premier League, right? Like you're at that point, you're legitimately comparing apples and oranges. So I think if you did have a Super League, Joey, in America, you would probably get in just based off tradition and where you're at. Like, you're not going to leave.
The McCaskies would love that.
100%. Like, you're not going. Like, look at what you do with the Chicago Bears now. You still always put them on Sunday and Monday Night Football against the Packers or whoever it may be because they're the Chicago Bears. And for whatever reason, everybody still watches, not just in Chicago. Or, you know, you still get tons of viewers. Now, I mean, you're going to get a lot of viewers for Sunday and Monday Night Football anyways, but you get what I mean. So, yeah, I think just off being in the city of Chicago, you're probably going to get all your – even the Cubs. I mean, you're talking probably the most popular – I think you could probably say the most popular National League team internationally, right? Like, just well-known in terms of around the globe. If you're speaking of the National League, it's probably the Chicago Cubs. I mean, who would fight them? The Dodgers,
right?
And I'm trying to think, you know, and then if you want to go over the AL, sure, like the New York Yankees, Boston Red Sox, but those teams would all be in it too. And probably the White Sox do squeak in, but just for the pure fact that they're a Chicago team. So interesting to think about. I don't really buy the theory that that type of Super League structure is coming to the States, though. It's a funny one, and it almost reminds me of like when you see something like in a Marvel movie or in a Marvel TV show, like in an episode, like there's so many going on nowadays with the WandaVision and the Winter Soldier, where Falcon and Winter Soldier, where like you see one thing and then like you just take it to a whole another level of like theorizing. And it seems like that's literally what sports fans did here, is they get one little snippet of information on what's going on and then they start connecting the dots, and all of a sudden, you know, the U.S. is bringing something, you know, owners are bringing it here, you know, you got the Glazers or something bringing it here, which I just don't think is going to be the case.
Yeah, but hey, power to the fans and the people. I mean, that thing got shut down real quick. Like, normally owners and the big money have all the power, and this thing just collapsed historically, and
yeah, literally,
it's gonna be I mean, that's what I'm telling you, this 30 for 30 on it's gonna be fascinating of how this thing sneakily came about
and then nope
and then gone.
Well, you also, without no hesitation, had plenty of criticism from players, from coaches, like I said, from like the whole football world over there in Europe was just like, no, like just about like I said, from the analyst standpoint, like it was a, you would probably say like a reporter's dream, right? As a journalist, too, like how awesome would that have been to interview a player and just get just true, straight, for the most part, like just reaction from them and let them know, like, you know, you're not going to have them like use any player speak and like beat around the bush about maybe, you know, I don't know, I guess that's up for the owners to decide. Like, no, they just straight said, nah, this
right.
This sucks. We're not doing it. So
wouldn't you think they would have had like a focus group or like a conversation with someone like, okay, let's talk to Messi and Ronaldo and a couple of people and be like, hey, if we did this, would this be a good idea? Like, because everyone was like, nope.
Well, I think that's another thing that made it, like, really shitty is, like, it literally was just, you know, like, this group of 12 or, like, this group of, like, you know, 20, 30 people, you know, like, this owner group that's getting together, you know, very small, probably, you know, smaller than that even, like, getting together and deciding to throw that out there. So the sneakiness and everything else about it obviously doesn't make the picture look any better when you look at that painted canvas, but you did mention that the McCaskies would be happy if it was Super League style. We had a former quarterback, former quarterback great, should we say, right? It's besides Jim McMahon, who is it, right? Are you going all the way back to
Luckman, baby?
Yeah, so remind me of the quote again.
Chicago is where quarterbacks go to die.
Interesting.
Just like Musi Muhammad said, Chicago is where wide receivers go to die. Very morbid.
I think Musi Muhammad was way more accurate in terms of what they mean by that. I mean, I think Jim McMahon, it would almost be more of a plus to the Bears if Jim McMahon was actually accurate about that. And I think I get what he was trying, where he was trying to come at, right? I think that at least what I'm assuming, like how I hear that, is that it's a place where just, you know, quarterbacks suck, which obviously we all know that, right? But if it's a place where quarterbacks, you know, came to die, that would almost be more pointing the finger at like coaching and poor development and things like that, which, hey, if Mitch Trubisky somehow revamps his career and, you know, and takes off, and, you know, whether it be over in Buffalo or wherever have you, then maybe that would be, we could say that's part of the problem. But no, it's just that it's where GMs and offensive minded head coaches potentially come to die, because you just can't get any offense or pick the right quarterback. You know what I mean? Like, That only makes sense if you actually have talent coming in. Like, who is your talent coming in? Is it Trubisky? Is it like the Cordell Stewarts and, you know, what, Shane Matthews? Like, I can't, Rex Grossman. Like, I can't think of any other names.
Cordell Stewart. Wow, that's
I'm just trying to think of like a prominent, or Jay Cutler.
That's
obviously
a blast from the past. That's like NFL Street. Anyways,
I guess Jay Cutler and Mitch Trubisky would probably be the most appropriate names to put out there in terms of like the type of you know, expectation you had for them, and then the career just going to shit. Well, I mean, Mitch Trubisky, obviously, you know, he has a long way to go. Go on ahead and write the next chapters for yourself, Mitch. But the same would be more accurate if you actually had somebody say like if you had like a Dante Culpepper in his prime come here and just didn't pan out, or, you know, a Donovan McNabb come here in his prime and doesn't pan out, or, you know, you go on and on and on, you know, quarterback, you know, if like a Peyton Manning came here 10-15 years ago, you know, and didn't pan out. So, I mean, that would make sense, but we just don't even have enough talent for that to even hold water, right? You haven't had a talented enough quarterback unless you, I mean, the most talented one ever, we talk about this all the time, it's probably Jay Cutler in terms of the most talented ever, you know, the most accomplished. You know, you go Sid Luckman, even Jim McMahon, just because of that Super Bowl 85-86. So, I mean, I get it. It's funny, but, I mean, it's more or less you have to have the talent in order for that to really, you know, be somewhat true.
Yeah, I didn't think about it that way, actually. Because I agree that the Musi Muhammad one's much more accurate, because you come right here and then you can get worse because of the quarterback you have. So I think it's interesting. I think it was a double whammy of, hey, by the way, you know, I'm the best Bears quarterback in the last, well, one of them in the last, let's say, 50 years. And
yeah,
the Bears are just inept at finding a quarterback. And oh, by the way, the best organization I ever played for was the Packers. And that was where I think it rubbed a lot of Bears fans the wrong way. But he's not wrong. Like, yeah. I mean,
one, he's not wrong, and two, I think that's more or less what he meant. Like, right, he was more or less throwing a jab at the quarterback situation.
Right, and so I agree with you. I think it's not, it's almost like you gotta go the other side of the circle of life. It's not where they die, it's where they're not even born. Like you don't even have
it's where
anything.
They don't even get a chance.
Right, you don't even have someone in there to screw them up. You don't even have that, like you said, that talent in the building. But it just, no matter what the specifics or the literalness of the quote, it just, it speaks volumes to what it's been since he played, you know, 40 years ago, of there's really just been nobody here that's been able to take the Bears over the top. I mean, the last two Pro Bowl quarterbacks for the Bears are Jim McMahon and Mitch Trubisky as an alternate. Not even Jay Cutler, because of injury and such. So it's just insult to injury of what has been going on for a long, long time. They still haven't seemed to get right, and I don't know when they will, but I gotta be an eternal optimist and hope they do. But it doesn't help when it's coming from the last guy that won you a damn Super Bowl.
You know what sucks, and we talked about this a lot in Bears season, is that you think of how many quarterbacks, and even up to this point, like head coaches, you know, the Bears have had within the past 5+, you know, 10 years, and then the Tomlin extension happens, you know, in Pittsburgh about, what was that, a week or so ago, and then they're reminded that they've only had, like, a handful of coaches, or was it, like, three head coaches or something just crazy like that in franchise history. It's like you have franchises out there who've had under five head coaches ever. You have franchises out there who've had less than five quarterbacks in the past decade. You know, you look at the Green Bay Packers with Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers, and like it's just silly. You look at the Patriots, right, with the long run Tom Brady had, and I don't know, like that's not incredibly common. I get it, but it's like, man, like some teams just like figured it out and like really do. I mean, think about like for Pittsburgh, you basically have to retire, right, to lose your head coaching job. But Tomlin up to this point still doing just fine, and it just all. Every time you see something like that, there's just longevity at an important position, whether it be head coach or quarterback, which is more or less what we're highlighting now here. It really just stinks as a Bears fan because it's like, oh, we're just going around in circles. And I think it's like this weird – I'm starting to think that it's less coincidental, right? Now you got me on this whole Chicago Bears soapbox where I think going around and around in circles with a quarterback and going around and around in circles potentially with another head coach and GM sooner or later, who knows? Maybe Nagy and Pace will be there for the next 10 years. You know, who knows? But I almost feel like in going around in circles so much, you're causing it to continue to go around and around in circles. Although, you know, you're obviously wrong if you go back to that draft and you get the – and you know, hindsight's 2020. Obviously, if you go back to that draft and you can have anybody else at that position at number two that the Bears traded up for, you get Patrick Mahomes, right? Like I said, if you literally have full hindsight, that's the guy you're getting. So it's like, I mean, really, if they just made the right move. But there's just so much just nonsense going on that I almost feel like it's causing more chaos. Like the more you add to it, the more chaos you're getting. And like it almost feels like it's only going to get worse and worse and worse and worse and worse and worse and worse until it finally does get better. But hopefully we're at the very end of that chaotic combustion, and then you're going to finally get to that place where you want to be as a franchise. But you know, it's weird. It's almost like that's like what McCaskey and Phillips almost tried giving you, right? Like this offseason is that no, that's exactly it. We want to stop changing the tires so much because they just keep falling off so much that changing the tires often is what's causing us to change the tires often. But yeah, it's just. You know when those comments are going to stop? When the Bears figure it out. So once again, full circle, that's when you'll stop hearing that. That's when you'll stop to, you know, that's when you could finally stop interviewing, you know, players of that also glorious 85-86 team and getting their negative reactions on things like this is when you finally figure it out. So if from an ownership standpoint or, you know, anybody in that front office, if you don't want to hear this type of stuff, then there's only one way to solve it. Because when you finally do win, just like you learned with the Chicago Cubs in 2016, that's when you stop talking about the bad stuff. That's when you stop talking about the Bartmans and the things of that nature, and you celebrate the damn thing. So until we get there, that's what we're going to get in our headlines year after year until they figure it out.
You're getting close to 40 years, man. It's a long time.
Would it be 5 years, huh? 5 years would be 40 since that Super was – really?
85. Oh.
Yeah, 85, 86. Yeah, we're getting close to that 2015.
You just turned 30.
Yeah.
Do the math.
Well, that's true, yeah, because I wasn't around for it. So, yeah, it's been 30. That's just nuts to think about. Like, it really, really is. And the sad reality of it is I think we hit that mark before winning another one. Because
sadly, I think you're right.
You know, so we have that to look forward to, the anniversary of the last time we won one, right?
Yikes. Yeah, no, I mean, I was just looking up, like, the Bears have had, like you mentioned, longevity and, you know, continuity, and the Bears have had six coaches since Ditka, and, like, a majority of them coming from the last 3 years of Trestman, Fox, and Nagy, yeah. You know, or half, at least, so, yeah, they can't seem to get it right, and...
Always wrapping it up on a sour note.
You know?
Always.
We always do. We always do. We can't do it. We can't have one full positive show. We could end up talking about like something fun, like ice cream or cinnamon rolls, or I'd say a vacation or where we're going, but you know, the world's still closed. But we can close it on optimism by saying that the Bears will eventually figure it out. Timetable will be disclosed later. But they will. They will. Well, that's going to do it for us today on the Believe in Chicago Sports podcast. We thank you all for listening. You can follow me on Twitter at Joey Gellman. The man on the other side of the Skype, Dan Collins, is at TweetDanCollins on Twitter. The show Believe in Chicago Sports is also on Twitter, at Believe in Chicago. As always, brought to you by the Believe Podcast Network, the number one podcast network for professionals. We'll catch you guys next week, probably same time, and we'll see what the Chicago sports landscape has in store for us. Maybe a little draft preview, because I can't believe the NFL draft is inching up closer and closer. Will the Bears mortgage everything to save their quarterback position? We'll have to wait and see what's on Ryan Pace's mind. Until then, have an awesome rest of your week. We'll talk to you soon. Take care.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.